Welcome to This Is Fine, the podcast from the Health Promotion student staff at MAC. Today, we're talking about COVID-19 and sex.
COVID has changed how college students work, study, and socialize, and it's also affected how we have sex. Today, we're bringing in two guests to discuss how to navigate sex and relationships during a global pandemic.
Jen Jacobson is the Director of Sexual Violence Prevention Education, as well as a member of McAllister's Infectious Disease Task Force, where she co-leads the Initiative on Behavioral and Cultural Change. And Dr. Steph Walters is the Medical Director for McAllister and co-chair of the Infectious Disease Task Force. You might also know her as founder of Pause at MAC and owner of Kevin.
Both our guests work under the umbrella of health and wellness here at McAllister in the Hamry Center, and both have backgrounds in public health. So hello, my name is Annika, and I am a junior here at MAC, and I use she, her pronouns.
And I'm Leah, I use she and they pronouns, and I'm a senior at McAllister.
And I'm Thea, I use she, her pronouns, and I'm a sophomore at McAllister.
The three of us are also all sexy trainers, and we are all student staff in the Hamry Center. So that means in normal times, doing events, workshops, educational stuff, promotional materials, and this year our boss said, can you make a podcast? And it took us a couple months, but we're giving this to you now.
So if you aren't familiar with what the Sexy program is, we are a peer sex education program. You might see us in the dorms your first year at McAllister. We do some like peer sex ed workshops. And then we also put on some events throughout the year. So you might know or follow us, if not, you should, on Instagram at McAllister_sexytrainers.
You can also follow at McAllisterHWC for the Health and Wellness Center and get some arguably less spicy but still important health tips.
And the three of us will be your hosts for this podcast.
And then, so our questions are about sex and COVID-19. And we just wanted to say before we got started that for us, we're looking at this from the mindset that Sexy, the sexual health education program at McAllister, takes with sex. So being as inclusive of all sexual orientations as possible, including asexuality, and also just the idea that sex can be whatever you want it to mean, the individual, and that it doesn't always mean penis into vagina or the involvement of genitals at all. So just we're saying sex as an umbrella term, but we also understand that not everybody wants to be having sex and sex looks different for everyone. So our first big question is it okay to hook up right now or have sex with someone new?
No, just kidding. So you are still autonomous adults and sexual health is part of health and you're still navigating something. So it's not up to me or anyone else to say what is okay or what is not okay. But I think what you're asking is like in a global pandemic is having potentially new, you know, sexual, intimate or romantic connections still possible or doable or allowed? There's certainly nothing about, you know, I mean, well, there are many things, honestly, about the community commitment or navigating in a pandemic that might make it feel like that's not possible. And I will just acknowledge that it is harder, but no doctor, no McAllister employee, no person anywhere on senior staff or leadership is here to tell you that you cannot have sexual connection. But I know that we're going to go through a lot of the challenges to that or maybe how to like navigate that the best that we can later on, but it is okay. It's always been okay if it's you and or partner or partners and it is consensual contact, it is okay. But consent has like new and nuanced meaning in this era, that's for sure.
So Dr. Steph brought up some great points about consent and how it's still important, but it's really different with COVID. I mentioned this to Jen, and this is what she had to say about that.
Yes, COVID has inadvertently created this opportunity for consent conversations across campus, including non-sexual consent conversations across campus. A lot of folks who've heard me talk have heard me talk about everyday consent. And everyday consent being about the dynamics in your life where actually we should be giving people respect and choice. which does two things. It allows people to navigate a more respectful McAllister community, but it also means if we get more practiced at thinking about consent in everyday life, then we are better able to negotiate, have conversations about, I don't mean negotiate like in the power like struggle way, I mean negotiate in having a back and forth. We're better able to do that in sexual situations, and the more our boundaries are respected, the more people ask for consent in everyday situations, the more aware we are when that's not happening in a sexual situation. So if we think about COVID and just your friend group, let's say you have a couple of friends and you're thinking about forming a pod, a closed circle of close contacts in which you can relax some of the prevention measures, where you could be in someone's room within 6 feet. You could choose not to wear a mask because you're part of a closed group, in the same way that my closed group is my household with my partner. That requires some conversation about consent and trust, right? Because you and that friend who is in your pod, what does that mean about precautions they're taking in other areas of their life, right? Are they in a pod with someone else? Because then it's no longer a closed circle. What kinds of risks are they taking on in other aspects of their life, right? And what does it mean? How do you mutually agree upon when you wear masks and when you don't? Let's take that now to a sexual context, right? Where maybe we're less practiced at saying, hey, you know, what kind of risks have you taken in your sexual life? Or have you been tested for STIs? That's often a really uncomfortable conversation that we need to normalize. And now we have some language from COVID protective behaviors to talk about that. Think about when we talk about a pod being a closed circle of that's the only person you're gonna have contact with it within 6 feet for 15 minutes or more. That's a conversation, right? That's important to have with a sexual partner of, are we exclusive sexual partners? Are we agreeing upon it's okay to have other sexual partners? If you're having other sexual partners, what precautions do we expect you to take, right? Condom use, dental exams, not having fluid exchange, whatever that looks like. So it's a really parallel conversation. And the silver lining of that is it lets us have that conversation in more places across campus with folks who aren't currently or in the near term or long term planning on having sex, because then we can still have those conversations. And it's a more comfortable place maybe for people to start with those conversations, because even though it feels new and awkward, we're not asking people to like start out of the gate talking about sex, which can often be fraught or, you know, depending on what culture you're in. I grew up Midwest Lutheran, like there's layers of shame in talking about sex.
Yeah. So continuing kind of this conversation about partnered sex during this pandemic, I was wondering if you wanted to elaborate. We kind of touched upon this earlier, but just recommendations of alternatives.
Ooh, yeah. Well, what about you all? Do you have some recommendations for alternatives to partnered sex? I want to hear from your wisdom.
I mean, yeah, in sexy training, we were for sure promoting masturbation, just like you talked about. Safest sex is solo sex. Mm-hmm. And that could be with the aid of visual or written porn. It could also be with a partner over technology in some way, mutual masturbation. But then we also talked about sort of the next safest might be someone who is in your household or your close contacts already. And that's two sort of layers underneath meeting up with someone completely new.
Yeah, totally. Do you want to talk about navigating, you know, well, okay, if I do want to meet up with somebody new and they're not in my household, like, is it time to sort of dive into how to navigate that? Or do you want to spend more time talking about safer COVID sex for people within the same pod or like in long-term monogamous or partnered relationships? Or like, what do you want to talk about?
Both, if you have answers for both.
Yeah. Okay. So we can riff on it a little bit. So let's remind folks that one challenge is that the way I think about a pod is sort of the way that common language out there, especially early on in the pandemic, talked about household. And right away we were like, wait, household doesn't apply to people either living alone or living in college. Like, what do they want those folks to do? But obviously for people in your household, you can't help with Well, you could, but it's very hard to avoid coming within 6 feet of those folks and having shared indoor breath space. Okay, so there's a pod, however many people live in your house. So it includes that. But if you already have a sexual or intimate partner, relationship partner, or friend that you want to have sexual relationships with, then the conversation around consent and talking about, well, what would we do if one of us got sick, or what is the expectation about like how much contact we'll have? Everyone's comfortable with a different level of risk. There is no right or wrong answer to this. I mean, some people might say, well, you know, I see you every day, and so if you're sick, I want to be with you. I don't want to be apart. Some folks might say, you know, I'm really worried about my own immune system or spreading it beyond, so I only want to see you when we're both feeling good. There's lots of different ways to mitigate risk. And what's most important is that it's transparent, that it's mutually agreed upon, that everybody's comfortable with the level of risk that they're taking. So that's like within a pod or household. Now I take a deep breath. Now the more challenging conversation around, okay, what if I want to have sex, and I know you guys are defining what sex means when we talk about this, but let's say I want to be within 6 feet of somebody. I want to have like face-to-face or close contact sex. How do we navigate that? And they're not in my pod. Do you have to get the permission of your pod? I mean, I laugh at it because like all our humanness is showing through all of this. You know, what matters most is communication, transparency, equality, addressing power and privilege dynamics, and like trying to bring that all to the table as you navigate it. But yeah, like, what if somebody in your pod does have a compromised immune system? Like, do we deserve a little more tender conversation around what risk you're going to expose them to if you want to have a new contact? If you want to have a new contact, that person has their own pod. Who are they trying to expect to protect? Like, I know this is a radio podcast, but I'm drawing little circles of connection like that all of us have seen, you know, from like patient zero. But I would say the most important thing is to almost frame it up like you do a really informed, respectful conversation around STI risk. So a lot of folks, I think, make the mistake of being like, okay, the conversation around STIs just goes, I got tested last week, I'm negative, you? And that's better than no conversation at all. But it also needs, because you and I, the three of us, we know that some STIs are skin to skin, some, you know, are blood or sexual fluids, some there's a vaccine for. So a really nuanced conversation around STI risk includes, when were you last tested? What kind of sexual contact have you had since that time? Do you have your HPV vaccine all up to date? I do. You know, what orifices were tested? What about blood tests, which would be HIV and syphilis? What about herpes that there is no test for? And I don't mean to be taking all the fun out of this. I think the delight and beauty of sexy training and good sex ed is that you can make that sexual respect is sexy, and that having a conversation that's as nuanced and informed and transparent of that, for most folks, that should be hot, not the opposite. And I hate to use the word should. It's like my least favorite word in that language, but that can be a good like measurement for you. So then the conversation around COVID needs to include all that. Who's in your pod? When I think about vulnerable people, this is what I think of. Who do you think of? Is there anybody that you know personally that would meet that criteria? You know, what level of risk are you comfortable with? Could we agree not only to see each other after we're well? And what's tough is that just like everybody will have different timing for when they feel ready to bring up that STI sexual respect conversation, everyone's going to have different timing when they feel ready to introduce this COVID risk factor and how many layers out to include people in that decision-making process. Some folks are like, you know, I don't feel ready to have a COVID risk discussion until I've established some rapport or seen if this is even a person I want to engage with. Hopefully you can do that in a physically distanced way, with text, with phone calls, with a walk on the sidewalk so that nobody's had any risk. Other folks are like, I don't want to bother engaging with anybody until we've had the COVID and STI risk factor conversation. There is no right way. I would just strongly encourage folks to be bold, to be vulnerable, to be open, to learn something, to practice. I mean, that's a little bit of a silver lining. I do feel like COVID and talking about risk, it's almost like a way you can practice having what is a more stigmatized conversation around STIs, thinking about that as part of consent and transparency. So it is really good practice to navigate that and have to communicate it with a pod. I am getting a lot of questions, even in one-on-one patient meetings, about that. Like, I live in a house off campus. Nobody has a regular partner. A couple of us are still really interested in dating, but we feel guilty about, like, you know, bringing that back to the house we're with. And, you know, my job is not to tell them exactly how to navigate that or what to do or what not to do. It's to make space for them and, like, try to give them some tidbits or phrases they could use or opening for that conversation, but mostly just to validate that these are really difficult conversations to have, but important. And once you've tried them, it's not that they get easier, but you feel more adept at showing that level of vulnerability and care for somebody. So that has to be a good thing long term. I don't know. I don't want to, like, rose colored glasses the pandemic, but there are some things that I think people are getting better at.
So with that being said, and the uncertainty about what's open and what's not, we just wanted to remind you guys that if you're near or on campus, the Hamry Center is open for in-person appointments that need to happen in person, like STI testing or treatment, but also telehealth appointments for other things too. And you should just call to make an appointment. Other ones in St. Paul and Minneapolis that we really like are Family Tree and Planned Parenthood. And if you have any questions about where to find resources wherever you are, if you're not near campus, please reach out. We would love to help you.
Okay, so from what we heard from that, we can still have sex, but how do we do it safely?
And what's the safest way to do it? Is there a safest way to do it?
That is such a good question. You know, being an adult, consensual, respectful sexual person in this world, that includes so many things. But accessing healthcare is one of those components, and STI testing. And I just want to remind people that the Hamry Center, Planned Parenthood, Family Tree, primary care clinics, we're about more than COVID testing right now, and that almost all of those services are still available to you. So most clinics, including ours, have really precise protocols about how to separate well from ill and when COVID testing is happening. So if getting STI testing is still part of you being your most healthy, sexually expressive self, please don't be shy about that. That's still really important. And there are safety precautions in place to make that happen. So yay, STI testing. Okay. Now about COVID testing, that isn't really included in the recommendations right now. And I will just say that in our nation's capital right now, there is a reminder that daily testing does not necessarily a COVID-free experience make. So a test, no matter what, is only ever a snapshot in time. And when we think about resource utilization and what is the most appropriate time to get a test and ethical decision-making around that, I have not, oh, I should have said this at the beginning. The landscape's changing quickly. Research is changing quickly. I'm a human person who's doing their very best to keep up with it, but I might say something today that is wrong, or somebody listening has evidence to the contrary, and that's my opportunity for learning. So please reach out to the sexy trainers. They'll probably include the email or contact info in this. Reach out to Dr. Steph's email and say, hey, I read this thing. Does that support or contradict or add to your knowledge around that? So at this time, I am not aware of any recommendations, and I wouldn't be recommending that to an individual patient that I was seeing, that they should get COVID testing before having contact with somebody new. So again, the main indications clinically right now for COVID testing are if you were a close contact with somebody with a confirmed positive case, and that's within 6 feet for 15 cumulative minutes, they don't have to be all together in time, or you yourself are showing symptoms of COVID. For now, those are the indications for testing. We do know that some asymptomatic testing is indicated and recommended by MDH. And an example would be, let's say at McAllister, we got 3 unconnected cases in one residence hall for COVID testing. MDH and us and public health folks be like, What's the challenge there? How are those people connected? And then maybe we would test a whole dorm so we could see what were the links between those folks, or where were they symptomatic carriers? So the college is doing surveillance testing. That's a very long blah, blah answer, which you will edit down. But at this time, it's not recommended necessarily to do COVID testing before having a new contact with somebody or after having contact, unless you were that person meets criteria for testing that I said earlier.
Okay, so quick interjection. As Dr. Zeff was saying, please check for updates on any of the statistics or COVID-related nuances said during this podcast. We recorded these interviews in October, so the state of things has definitely changed with more studies and reports released, and case numbers also drastically increasing since then. Okay, back to the podcast.
So cyber sex, that sounds like a happy medium between real sex and no sex at all, but how does consent factor into that? I mean, isn't stuff like sending nudes really risky?
If you're under 18, not only is it risky, but it's very much illegal, so don't do it at all.
Yeah, I was also confused about that, which is why we asked our professionals, and Jen had some really great tips.
You all were clear with me up front and in our email that this would be recorded, right? That's actually part of the purpose of a podcast. That should be a question for any kind of sex over any kind of media. Is it okay for this to be recorded or not? And people should be agreeing upon that up front. That should not be a question that comes up in the moment, right? Because, right, we want people to have rights over their own images, own videos, and that piece is really important. And I encourage folks to really think long term. You may trust this other person while you are in some sort of relationship, however we define that. If you were to break up, how do you feel about that person having these files? Or what's your data security? Or, you know, thinking about that. So the same kinds of things apply with an extra layer of, you know, we know consent is best given clearly, verbally. We know verbal is not accessible to everybody. We also know that we read body language too, right? So if we know only enthusiasm is a yes, and if someone is feeling ambivalent, that is not a yes, and it's worth a pause and more conversation, that ambivalence may be harder to read over Zoom or over the phone or over FaceTime than it is in person. So that means there's actually an obligation on every party involved to be extra attuned, that if you're missing some opportunities for some of that, you know, physical feedback, you know, that means like, I need to pay more attention to other cues, or I need to make sure I'm pausing to check in. I'm pausing to check in more often than I normally would.
But cyber sex isn't for everyone. And for some people, in-person sex is still an option or something they're interested in. Yeah, but it's really important to still have conversations about how you want to do it in person. So we talked to Dr. Steph and Jen about how you could go about doing that.
But we also know that some of us might be feeling guilty or anxious or just plain stressed and not in the mood to be having any sex right now. Or maybe sex just isn't part of your life, whether there's a pandemic going on or not. But we want to validate that a lot of us are also craving physical touch and intimacy that isn't sexual. And we also talked to Dr. Steph about that.
It's hard not to feel judgment when you see something like at the national level of them having like no mask ceremonies and so on and so forth, when we ourselves are like, I haven't hugged my 75-year-old parents in 6 months, you know, like that we are all making sacrifices in touch and connection. And it is important that we do our best in a sustainable, ongoing way, as opposed to like all or nothing. So when I say there needs to be a shared communication and understanding of risk and nothing is risk-free, you may decide that, like, okay, for example, Michael Osterholm, former state epidemiologist, gives a podcast. Okay, so you know who he is. And he talked about, and I like teared up when he said this. He said, you know, I have grandkids and we hadn't hugged them for a long time, but we talked about our exposure. We hadn't had any for a while. We were outdoors and we decided to have a 30-second hug. together. And that was the only hug that they'd had. And so maybe, you know, like I had friends in town and we hadn't seen them for a long time and we didn't do anything within 6 feet. But like I said, if we both put a mask on, could we hug goodbye? And it was like a very quick sort of sideways hug, but it was a physical touch. And that was a risk that we were both comfortable with. What I really have gotten in the practice of doing when I'm meeting somebody for a walk, I bring my mask and I like wave at them and say, hey, we haven't connected in COVID yet. I'm comfortable walking outside 7 feet apart in this uncrowded neighborhood, but I have my mask. If you would rather that we both wear a mask, I'm just totally good with that. So there needs to be a way to affirm for the person that you're going to enter into a hug with or shared back rubs or head massage or going to get your hair cut. I got my hair cut in the salon and I was just like, wanted that shampoo to last for so long. I mean, when do we not want the shampoo to last for so long? But that probably is part of it, is that our lives are different now. We don't have casual touch, let alone some of the intentional touch that we had all grown so fond of. So whether the touch you're seeking is sexual, ongoing, partnered, group, or not, or just like a hug, the same process has to apply. What risk are we both comfortable doing? There's no such thing as risk-free touch, but you can mitigate it. You can like both wear a mask. You can hug. I don't know. You can hold your breath. Like I laugh because there's not that I know of like great research on that. But what's important is that everybody feels they made an informed choice about what they were going to do to seek it out. So it kind of keeps coming back to the same things: compassion, empathy, transparency, communication, like all those points.
Yeah, I miss hugging my friends, hugging my family. I don't know.
Yeah, isolation has also just been really hard on all relationships, like romantic or not. Which just like not being able to hug or be physically near your loved ones. It's a rough time.
Yeah, and connecting people could be especially hard for first years right now, or even sophomores who only spent part of last year on campus. I know that, like, I realized recently that all of my friends from Mac, we've actually been friends in quarantine longer than we were, like, friends physically close to each other. So that's been really hard.
Since we had this opportunity to talk to a doctor, I kind of have a question that I've gotten a few times, sort of in a joking manner, but I mean, I think some people are thinking about it seriously. When I mentioned to people that I was doing sex ed over Zoom and that kind of a thing, I've gotten the question, should I wear a mask while I'm having sex?
Yeah. Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up. I've gotten that question too. And I actually have two adult friends. They're each other's only sexual partner, but they live in other households. And that's what they've chosen to do. They're not like kissing or having shared breath space. They are having masked, you know, genital sex. And I just was like, thank you. So first people tell me these things because like they know about my job. And so I get a lot more information and it's never TMI. It just fills my heart. I'm like, this is a great example. And like, I don't know, this is where we ended up, but like we both have kids and we have other household and this is what feels good. And I'm like, you just said it. Pleasure is the measure. If it feels good to you and that feels right and you're both getting pleasure out of it and you feel like it's risk mitigation, good for you. So my answer again, because I hate the word should, is there's no should I wear a mask or shouldn't I wear a mask. You should do what feels consensual, pleasurable, a risk tolerance or risk mitigation that both, if it's one-on-one sex or all, if it's like group activity, that everybody feels comfortable with. That's the important thing. Theoretically, because we don't yet at the time of Aaron, I don't know of any evidence saying that there's like a sexual transmission component that isn't like the shared breath space or respiratory stuff. That could make some intuitive sense, you know, or like, didn't we talk at the sexy training? I was just like cracking up. I'm like, what? Like, would mutual oral sex be safer because you're like further away from the mouth, or like, you know, certain positions be safer because you're not turning to each other. And there's all sorts of ways people could get creative. And as long as they feel comfortable and they feel like that's mitigating risk, great. But let's be realistic. If like that just happens to be that way that you're having sex, but you shared a whole bunch of breath space and we're like leaning into each other with coffee or there was kissing earlier, like that doesn't make much sense to me. But if all of the rest of your contact is either physically distanced or from screens and the only contact you're going to have I could see that making some intuitive sense is either thinking about body positions or masking if that's what you want to do. But again, is it a sustainable behavior? Is that how you're always going to do it? My adult friends who are having masked sex that way are still doing it. And now it's like a habit and it's on repeat for them, but I'm going to check back in with them in a month and be like, is that still what y'all are doing? Stay tuned. We could do another podcast then and I'll let you know.
So do you think that COVID will change how college students have sex in the long run?
Oh, totally.
I think so. I think it's kind of, I mean, it's hard to say if it's for the better, right? Because it's not like any of us really want this to happen, but it's happening. But definitely, I feel like what we, Jen and people, what we've talked about, what Jen mentioned about, like, there might be some more pressure to make, like, individual meetups, like, count, so to speak. And like maybe there might be more pressure to do more, I don't know, activities if you're already within somebody's pod or like circle or.
Well, like, and you know, in the long run, do you think it's gonna, do you think we're gonna see like a higher prevalence of like cyber sex maybe before you meet someone in person? That's what I wonder of, like, if you were meeting people on dating apps and then like when your only option was cyber sex, that maybe you get more comfortable with that as like.
It just like what, again, what we've been talking about, like the safety concerns, right? Like, how do you know that someone on the internet is really who they say they are? And what a different, I feel like different apps and different like platforms, like Snapchat, for example, at least you know then if somebody screenshotted it or like there's like a feel, there's like a little bit more of like a feeling of control, like it's going away after this conversation or like in 24 hours or whatever.
Yeah, and, like, that's, like, if I meet someone on a dating app that, like, I hate Snapchat, I hate it as a form of communication, but that's what I give people if we're going off of, like, Tinder or whatever it is, because I want to be able to see their face, and I want them to see my face and be like, is this what we agreed to?
Yeah, you chemistry know what I mean? And more candid photos.
Right.
It's just, like, also knowing that those photos were taken in real time makes a big difference, I think. With
true.
That. I also feel like, I mean, obviously, time is the only thing that we'll be able to, time will only tell, right? And I feel like a lot of people, just like meeting up with people has become such a concern. Like you have to actually like take a lot of consideration into whether or not you're going to actually see somebody, whether yeah. it's a friend or a date or a hookup. And so like, I think people are going to be taking things a little bit more seriously, maybe. Obviously it depends on the person. And then like, maybe people will just go insane after a quarantine lifts. I don't know how it's going to go. But that's just something that I've been thinking about.
Well, whether it's serious or not, we're also just way more up in each other's business, right? Like, even if you want to have something casual, I mean, if you're looking out for everybody's best interest, you kind of need to tell everyone you live with. Hopefully they're telling everyone they live with. You're probably going to talk about, like, if you go to work or school, like, you get to know someone. You get to know so much more about someone, even if you don't have any intention of making this a long-term thing. And it's kind of interesting. Might make people less likely to ghost or something. I don't know if you actually know more things about a person. Or maybe it's easier to ghost if you can just be like, sorry, can't, COVID.
Yeah, I feel like in some ways it almost is easier to ghost because, as Jen talked about, you spend a lot more time talking to someone before you meet up with them. So I think there's a lot more time in between to decide, like, is this even worth the effort that I'm putting into it? Of like, if I have to be texting this person for like however long before we meet up, am I still actually enjoying doing that? Is it still worth it to me? Which I think is interesting. Whereas like before this, you could like match with someone that day and then that night yeah. if you wanted to.
Maybe less regret then over sexual encounters, potentially, if you have more time to vet someone beforehand. Not necessarily, yeah. but...
Yeah, although the bar is lower.
The bar is lower. Who is in my radius? I cannot leave my neighborhood.
Okay, this might be a little bit off topic, but this is what I've been thinking about. And what I got from our conversations was that the hope is that people are getting more comfortable with talking about like the results, like COVID results, and therefore maybe more open to talking about STI testing. And so maybe in that sense, just like being more transparent about who you're being exposed to, I think exposed might be a strong word, but yeah, who you're meeting up with. Yeah. And then like, in that case, like keeping track of like.
Yeah, maybe that would make non-monogamy easier and more prevalent, potentially. If you feel like comfortable and like you know everything, maybe you'd be more willing to have more partners. I don't know.
And also for there to be the space for you to be honest about that, that like that you sort of have to be honest and open about that, and so that people really know what they're getting into. And yeah.
Yeah, because even though like we like to stress, like getting an STI is usually not a big deal. You can cure all of them. But if left untreated, they can be really serious. And I think, yeah, maybe for the first time, people are thinking about really serious consequences that could come out of having a hookup or whatever, which is potentially good to be aware of. I mean, I don't want to be sex negative. Sex is fun, but you're thinking more. It's weird. Like, also, that threat of like the risk is no longer contained to right, the people exactly. having sex is super weird, because we're used to, especially in the US, like very private, not talked about. And now all of a sudden you need to tell your grandma. I don't know. Maybe.
Well, this goes into like the whole question of like, how do you even analyze risk? Like, how do you know? I don't want to say someone's worth it, but you know what I mean.
No, I think that kind of is
it. I know a friend whose household is actually kind of doing the, like, we're going to decide if this person's, like, worth it to pull into the bubble. And, like, I don't know, worth it is, like, how much you like them. I hope it's just that. I hope it's not other things. Like, well, attractiveness or something.
To make it less shallow, like, there's also non-sexual examples of this, of, like, so I'm someone who's been living off campus at home, but I'm moving to an off campus apartment, and I sort of had to decide who I wanted to live with, of like who was worth it in terms of people I wanted to be around a lot, but also trusted to make good decisions about COVID, right? That I didn't want to have to get into arguments about what our pod looked like or who they were seeing. And so like there is that element too of like, who are the people I trust to have in my pod to begin with?
Yeah. Who do I think is mature and open to having those conversations?
Yeah.
It's all super important. Yeah.
And that's, I mean, something to consider when you're like picking a sexual partner now, which maybe wasn't on the forefront of your mind before.
I know, being like off campus and on campus, like suddenly it makes such a big difference. Like it always did, but like in terms of who you're in contact with.
I wonder, I feel like something none of us know the inside scoop on is what like the culture is in the dorms right now. Like, do they have sex? What's going on in there?
I'm taking Spanish with first years, and I like keep wanting to ask them. I like want to know all the drama.
So, hey, any first years listening, if you would like to enlighten us, please. What's the culture like in the dorms? Because we're curious. Anonymously, maybe let us know. Do you invite? I was also thinking about this because I just find it really hard to believe that McAllister students are only having sex with McAllister students. Even more so, McAllister is already a small campus, and now it's only one grade.
It's like orientation week, but the full week is a year
now. If they told me all my friends had to be in my year, I'd talk to, like, two people. Like,
well, no, and that's, like, and for sophomores, too, right? We're, like, most mm-hmm. of the friends I made were my year because that's who I was living with and around, and, like, I only got so many classes to meet other people, and, like, I wasn't doing sexy yet. And so like a lot of my friends from like my actual friends from when I was there are all my year.
But it's also been a sort of really interesting experience to have to meet people online. Like it is really isolating to live at home where I don't have a lot of friends around. But my involvement in stuff like sexy has made it so that I can develop these relationships completely virtually, which has been great, but also really weird because these are people I've never met in person, but I like do feel connected to.
Yeah, I mean, I'd imagine that's a pretty common feeling among people living far away from campus or just anyone doing online classes. So yeah, anyone listening, any grades on campus, off campus, international or students or just people living far away, please let us know how the school year is going for you. How are you forming relationships, if they're sexual or platonic, in person or online, anything, all of the above. So we're going to be putting out a call for your experiences and hopefully sharing them on the Sexy and Health and Wellness Instagram pages. So keep an eye out for that.
So yeah, I guess that concludes our podcast. So our next episode will address loneliness and mental health. pandemic fatigue and how to get through this COVID-19 winter. Look for it again in the Mac Daily and on the Health and Wellness Center website.
This podcast was written by Fia Mitnick and Annika Wennerlund and edited by Leah Yamasato.
A big, big thank you to Jen Jacobson and Dr. Steph Walters.
And thank you to our bosses, Lisa and Abby, for their support throughout this entire process.